And I'd like to call to order the study session for the Mesa City Council for Monday, April 23rd, 2012. Councilman Higgins, you there yet? She's not. So the first item on the agenda, I would like to excuse Councilmember Higgins, who obviously is not with us. And the first item on the agenda is to review tonight's regular council meeting agenda. Page 2, items 3A through 3C. Items 3D through 4B. 4C through 4I. 4J through 4L. 4M through 4O.
Question, Mayor.
Councilman Fenter.
On 4O, I just received an email from a District 2 resident that was concerned about the first solar facility and spending this much money. I haven't had a chance to talk with her, but I was wondering maybe somebody from staff could just give us a quick overview of why we're doing this, and is it solely because of First Solar, or are there other needs out there?
And maybe how it ties into 5.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. 4-0, Signal Butte and Elliott. There are a variety of things going on out in this area. It's a very busy area right now in terms of things that are going on. One is the one you just heard about, which is Eastmark Development. They are in the process of developing Development Unit 7, which is just to the south of this area. They will be constructing Signal Butte on the west side from Ray North a ways along their development. So they'll be completing a southern portion of this road. This project will complete the west side of Signal Butte along the First Solar frontage, as well as the south side of Elliott frontage along First Solar, as well as the north side of the road on Elliott. So in addition to the work that Eastmark will be doing on Signal Butte, we will also be doing the north side of the road at the same time under a grant with the Maricopa County Department of Transportation. If you recall, we redid portions of this intersection to serve the fire station to the north, Fire Station 219, which we'll be doing a ribbon cutting on here in a couple of weeks, and opening up so it also facilitates emergency access in and out of the intersection. This will complete kind of the southwest corner of the intersection and the northwest corner of the intersection so that we can have a more complete intersection in the area. So there are a variety of things occurring. I'll also point out, really, we are getting excellent, still getting pretty good construction prices right now. We do anticipate with the price of fuel that we will start to see many more increases in the price of asphalt as projects go forward. So we have a variety of things going on in this intersection.
Appreciate that. Maybe we can have you coordinate with Ian and contact this individual and let her know what's going on. So
okay.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
One other thing, even though First Solar is not fully operational from their manufacturing standpoint, because the building's been built, I'm assuming they have paid impact fees and construction sales tax.
Yes, they have, Mayor.
And those numbers are not small numbers?
Fairly significant. And we can quantify those for you, but they're fairly significant. And we see those collections in our permit fees this year. And certainly in the sales tax, you'll notice there's a significant increase in the construction sales tax, of which we will consider those as one-time revenues. But there's definitely has been an increase in our construction sales tax this past year.
So what I'm hearing is a couple things. Number one, there's a lot more activity in that area than just the First Solar. And these improvements that we agreed to do for First Solar, I think it's important to note, were on our plan to do, regardless of whether First Solar was going in or not. What we did is we simply accelerated these plans to meet the First Solar construction. We also, at the time, I don't believe DMB's plans called for them to start as soon as they were on the residential subdivisions that they are now going to start on to the that you mentioned, I believe, to the south.
To the south.
Yeah, so they've accelerated those. So even without First Solar, this work may have had to have been accelerated anyway because of what DMB is doing down the road. And we have an obligation under DMB to finish some of these improvements under the whole scheme of what DMB is doing.
Yes, it all connects.
It's all connected. And we've already collected the impact fees and construction sales tax from First Solar, which means the net cost of the city is substantially reduced because they've built the building. We've got the money. Okay? Anything else? 5A through 5H? Five I through 6C. Seven A through 9A. And note that on 8A, a 3/4 vote is required. Nine B through 10A. And I understand, Mr. Wesley, there's a legal protest has been filed on 10A.
That's correct, Mayor.
Okay. We haven't had one of these in a long time.
Been a while.
Not a legal protest, but I mean even a normal zoning application. So on this one, I would guess the applicant will be given a chance to present their case.
Yes, Mayor. He is here. Does have a presentation to make.
Okay. He has a presentation ready. So we'll give him, let him go first.
Correct.
Then staff report.
Any citizens, if they have any
comments. And then citizens. I'm assuming that there will be citizens since someone's filed a legal protest, and we'll go with the citizens after that. Okay. Does that sound okay?
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's just weird. We have not had a formal zoning like this for a long time. That's actually good, because that means that the economy is doing better. All right, anything else? Great. Okay, the first thing on the study session agenda is to hear a presentation by direction on energy resources budget issue. Mr. McCray.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. My name is Frank McCray. I'm with the Energy Resources Department. With me is Mike Comstock, our Deputy Director, and Mary Larson, our Senior Fiscal Analyst. Just jump right into the presentation. We serve 13,300 residential customers in the electric service area in the downtown area. We also have about 41,000 gas utility customers in Mesa, of which there's about 38,800 are residential. Our next six slides illustrate or summarize our department's proposed innovations. The NEDCO light rail program is moving pretty well. We've had 115 commercial customers qualify for the credits on their summer bills, which will equate to about 20%. We also took an opportunity to review what happened during the June 2011 outage and see if there was something we could identify as projects to remedy those types of outages or to mitigate their impacts. And we've come up with two projects. One is the installation of some switches that will be virtually instantaneous switching from supplies of one circuit to another, as well as some mobile generators. We've also recently been informed by the fire department that they received a grant for a generator, so we'll combine the procurement of those generators and be able to enhance the utilization and the effectiveness of both programs. Turning to the next slide, talk a little bit about the charging stations. They'll be provided by Ecotality, which is the winner of a U.S. Department of Energy grant, and they should be operational by July 1st. We've indicated where four locations of those charging stations will be on the next slide, and the fifth location is still under review. So there's a map of where the four locations will be with the number of charging stations at each location. We currently have about a 20% renewable energy portfolio in our electric utility supply program, and we're looking to expand that to include some solar. So we've planned some projects such as what you see illustrated in these two pictures, very similar to what Banner has at their Mesa Corporate Center. We're also moving forward with our solar program for residential and commercial customers. We'll be bringing back the details of that program to the council on May 10th. Our last innovation proposal is based upon succession management. We've done some recent studies. About 33% of our entire workforce is eligible for retirement within 3 years. Some of those are key management positions. And during the transition from field and technical positions to management positions, sometimes we don't have a real strong background in finance and accounting and strategic planning. So what we're going to do is focus on four different ways in order to help our succession management. One is we'll create some rotating management training positions. So we'll bring people up within the organization into training positions. We'll have some in-house and short course training that we'll share with other departments. We'll have a much more strong guidance on our tuition reimbursement program for our employees that are taking advantage of the college tuition reimbursement. And we'll also have a community involvement component for those anticipated leaders of our department. In fiscal year 11-12, we had two major milestone projects. One was the issuance of an RFP where we acquired some new supplies of electricity. That'll reduce our cost by about 10% on an annual basis compared to our prior contracts. The other major milestone project was the completion of our transmission pole replacement project. And the next slide shows the heights at which we are lifting the poles to replace the poles. So we're replacing wooden poles with concrete and steel poles. So this gives an indication of just how complicated the project was. And I really want to extend our gratitude to Beth Huning and her department and the engineers that worked on this project and construction management. They did a phenomenal job in getting this completed in the time frame that it was. For the next fiscal year, we've identified about $5 million of electric infrastructure that we can install while the light rail construction project is going forward. This will help us facilitate the timely and effective installation of services to meet some transit-oriented development along the light rail alignment. And so this will lower our cost and shorten the lead times for such installations. Our two major projects in fiscal year 11-12 for gas was a similar RFP that we issued for gas supplies. It'll reduce our cost by... Yes, sir.
Councilor Richens has a question.
Jump in here. You kind of glazed over the rest of that slide. Something near and dear to my heart in there, and about undergrounding of overhead, setting some money aside in the enterprise to do such things.
Yes, sir. We've based upon some input from iMason yourself, we've started doing some undergrounding projects. The most significant one is along Mesa Drive right now. But we've also identified some other projects where there is significant underground work going along, such as Country Club. And so we're tying those projects in with some undergrounding of electric facilities in the area. We do have some unspecified money available for different types of undergrounding projects. So we're looking for opportunities with which to convert overhead distribution facilities to underground.
Great, thank you.
So our two main gas projects in fiscal year 11-12 was the gas RFP, where we changed our gas supply arrangement somewhat. Those new contracts compared to our prior contracts will reduce our annual energy supply contracts by about $5.3 million. The other project is waste management is in operation. They've been going full operation for the last several months, and they have told us that they're looking to accelerate their conversion of their fleet from diesel to CNG.
Councilor Richens.
Is that CNG is for fleet use?
That is CNG for waste management, the corporation that serves.
But it's for their trucks, yeah. That pickup.
But it's for their trucks, yes.
Fleet, within their fleet. Okay,
yes, sir.
Good.
So how did we get that contract or that arrangement?
They are, that their facility is inside of our natural gas service territory. Okay. And so we found out about their conversion of their fleet from diesel to compressed natural gas. We entered into negotiations and negotiated agreement to extend the services to them with certain financial commitments on their part in exchange for us delivering them service.
Okay.
For 12-13, our major project will be the Power Road project, which will also include a connection to Gate Station 3 with El Paso Natural Gas. This is about a 6.5-mile project of 8-inch high-pressure steel pipe. Total cost of about $5.8 million, and this will greatly reinforce our service to the southeast portion of Mesa. Here's a financial picture of our department for fiscal year 11-12's budget, what we estimate for fiscal year 11-12 to end up at, and what our proposed budget is for fiscal year 12 and 13. So with that, we'd open up to any questions or recommendations or points of discussion.
Any questions? Just waiting to see if someone's going to speak up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is to hear presentation, discuss, provide direction on Water Resources Department.
Good afternoon. I'm hoping some other people join me up here. All right. Great. I'll run this thing. Mayor, council members, I think you know the crew, but with me today are Jake West, Susan Miller, and Alicia Solano, the deputies here in the Water Resources Department. I know you've had this presentation for a week, so I'll cruise along and stop me if you have questions. There are really three things that I wanted to emphasize today. The first is employee performance, and we've really asked our employees to step up to the plate, and they've done so, and they've done more with less and been innovative and really hard, strong workers, and we're very appreciative of that. And Susan's going to talk a little bit more about that when we talk about disinfectant byproduct removal. We also have been emphasizing resource efficiency, making the best use of every dollar that we spend, optimizing our chemical use, minimizing our miles driven, and minimizing our energy demands. We'll also talk a little bit about asset management and some of our efforts there. And I also wanted to assure you that, you know, there are real dollars associated with these innovations. These are not necessarily budget savings, because some of these savings are in capital. For example, ways we've been innovative and therefore won't need to spend capital dollars. And I have a breakdown of these if you'd like to see them later. But wanted to assure you that there are real dollars at stake here, and we're working our best to save everything we can. With that, I'm going to have Susan talk a little bit about the distribution system and water quality management, because that's really been one of the efforts where our employees have stepped up to the plate and really just done a fantastic job.
Does it work?
Yeah, it should.
Okay. Disinfection byproduct management, we've been talking about this for maybe 10 years. The EPA came out with a new regulation regarding disinfectant byproducts within the distribution system. About 4 years ago, it went into law, and we had to start into the regulations, and we had to start submittals on it. And the regulation itself goes into effect this year, 2012. We have to be in compliance on a four-quarter running average this year. So we've been working on this initiative for quite a while. Some of the biggest things we've done in the last couple of years is we've moved to a very cost-effective strategy that was maybe not the strategy envisioned originally by EPA when they came up with the costs that utilities would have to spend to comply with this regulation. But by working together with our engineering group, our water supply group, water quality, and our lab, we have come up with some innovative solutions, and one of them was the aerators that we're using at the reservoirs that you approved several months ago. They're relatively small aerators, and they strip the DBPs, which are volatile organic carbons, out of the water into the air, and these are very, very small concentrations. So it's not like we're moving from one medium to a problem in another medium. It actually does remove them from the water where the concentrations are limited to 80 parts per billion. And it's a very small volume of water because it's only in a part of our distribution system. And this is a very innovative program and has required a lot of cooperation from the various operating groups we have in the utility. And it saved the city, we believe, quite a bit of money from other more costly solutions that we might have had to go down the road of earlier. So.
And let me add there, Susan's being shy. We're going to spend a couple million for this project. Other cities have had to spend tens of millions of dollars. So the savings are significant.
Yeah, I think the project that you approved for the aerators themselves, without staff time, of course, was $550,000, and with staff time, it's obviously a little more than that, but that's quite a bit of savings. The other project that we have was the city's own solar bees. These are a very low energy use mixing system within the large 10 million gallon reservoirs that we have in the city zone. We have three of those. It completely mixes these reservoirs using, like I said, very low energy, and the mixing systems themselves are relatively cost effective. They were only $75,000 a unit. That gives us not only mixing, but a more consistent chlorine residual, which also helps us with our DBP mitigation. Another initiative we have that was...
Wait. That's a weird picture. I mean, it's a pretty cool picture. You want to explain just very quickly how that works, what that does?
Well, there's a mixer at the top, at the surface level. And if you think of the mixer, it's like...
So this is like a big Bosch.
It's like a fan, almost. It has impellers, and it goes around. Then it has what's called a draft tube. And what it does is the draft tube is flexible and collapsible, and it sits in the center. So what it does is it pulls the water up through the draft tube and shoots it out and creates a rolling action. Once you get the initial energy of the rolling action, it just kind of is a perpetual motion machine. And it slowly mixes the reservoir and keeps it complete mix.
But right, I was told in junior high physics those were impossible.
A perpetual motion machine?
Yeah. And the solar panels, and it's run by solar energy?
It can be run by solar energy if we have. They're very low power usage, so if we had a bunch of rainy days or something, it could be powered by electric, but they are full.
That's because it's a perpetual
panels.
Motion machine.
Yeah, that's so right. It's a perpetual motion machine. But it's a good solution, and the flexible tube allows you to have any water level in the reservoir. So if you want to, during low demand times, run the water level way down so that you didn't have all this water sitting in the reservoir, you could, and it would still mix it at this very low volume.
Okay.
So
thank you.
That was another area that we engineered into to save money. One of the other issues we had was chlorine residual. As you know, for the formation of DBPs, you have organic compounds that are in the water and you have chlorine. If you don't have the chlorine high enough, we're in exceedance of a rule, or we don't meet a rule that has to do with the fact that we have to have a minimum residual of chlorine within our distribution system at all times in all parts of our system. If you have the chlorine too high and you aren't managing it correctly, you have residential complaints, you have too much chlorine, and you have more formation of the disinfection byproducts. So one of the things we've been doing with staff is enhanced monitoring of the chlorine and more chlorine rechlorination stations so that we can fine-tune the chlorine levels. And that takes a lot of cooperation, a lot of monitoring, a lot of lab tests, and it takes our SCADA programming to optimize our system so that we have just the right level of chlorine in the system and we have the right contact times within our reservoirs.
I've been trying to do that in my pool all month.
See how much work it is? It's a very similar issue that we run into. You know, we have to monitor it all the time, and it depends on temperature. Mm-hmm. It depends on the chlorine, it depends on the characteristics of the water itself. So it is not an easy...
And the owner of the pool.
And the owner of the pool, exactly.
And your employee.
And you know, and... and Frank McRae was up here talking about succession planning, and one of the important things about this is that we're bringing this knowledge in-house, and we're asking our engineering staff to do this work themselves, to engineer this work themselves, so that we have that knowledge here among our staff rather than having to rely on outside consultants. I'm going to skip ahead to and have Jake talk to you just real quickly about our new initiative in mobile dispatch. This has to do with, you know, we turn on and turn off a very large number of utilities every year. People move in, they move out. They acquire new homes, they leave. And we implemented something called mobile dispatch. Jake's going to talk to you about that and how it's increased efficiencies and also helped our customers.
Good afternoon. My presentation is not as elaborate and has all this fancy gimmicks as Susan's, but as Catherine mentioned, our customer service field operation groups are responsible for doing the turn on and turn off works for the water, gas, and electric, as well as do the if we have, for some reason, you know, we have customers that don't pay, they actually are responsible for the disconnection of services, as well as they respond to during daily normal business hours and nights and weekends for our water-related emergencies. What they used to do in the past before we got the mobile dispatch system is you'd get just a bucket load of work in the morning. The supervisor would split it by person, and they'd look at their sheets, and they'd figure out where in their route they needed to be, and they were routing themselves. What we have today is a system, a computerized system, that when that information is given to us every morning, it's downloaded onto their computer, it's put in their truck, and they're routed. What we've seen is we've got an additional number of gas appointments, so a customer that wants his gas turned on a certain time of day, they need to be there. Now we've got more appointments available to them, so if there were a certain number of appointments already in their route, they'd have to be put on to the next day. Now we've increased that. What we also have is the ability for real-time activity when an order has been received and dispatched and closed. The dispatch people at the customer service operations center knows where that person is, so if a customer needs to change their appointment based on they can no longer wait or they need the emergency for some reason they're living, we can eliminate from that daily workload, saving us a trip out to the property and not being able to perform the work. We've seen that seasoned employees who at first for years been very good about routing themselves were slow to take on to this new technology, but after 3 or 4 months of using it, they're seeing a real benefit. We're getting more orders done per day in a shorter time period, which is freeing us up to do other things within the city. So it's been we've only been using it for 4 months now, so it's kind of new to us, but every day we're learning more about it. We're creating more work orders and service types so that we can get better at tracking what our customer needs are and how well our employees are performing and meeting those needs.
Regarding capital improvement projects, I'm going to have Susan go through each of these in detail for you real quick. Just kidding. Actually, we're just going to focus on.
You might as well. We're already unconscious.
Actually, what I wanted to focus you in on are really three things: pipelines, pump stations, and plant expansions, the three P's. That's really, if you look at our capital improvement plan, that's really where we're going to be spending our money over the next couple of years. Pipelines, you know, we've got this new Val Vista transmission main that's going to be coming down through Councilmember Richens' district, replacement of older pipes, and then, of course, expansion of new pipes in Southeast Mesa. I'll skip through these. We also have a new program. We came in front of the Sustainability and Transportation Committee and talked a little bit about this. We're also proposing a new program to slowly and over time install new sewer pipelines in areas that are currently on septic. And pump stations.
Can I ask you a little bit about that?
Yeah.
Just very quickly about that.
Absolutely.
What you're going to install new sewer lines, but how will the connection go with those properties that are along the path of the line?
Right. So what we have in mind is that we'll keep the program the same for commercial and multifamily properties. Today, commercial and multifamily properties always have, when they're on septic, and there are a few of them, when their septic fails, they have to tie in to the city sewer system at their expense. And that will not change. But what will change is that when a homeowner, not one associated with a development, just, you know, mom and pop, when their septic fails, we will not require them to tie into the sewer system. Instead, we will allow them to wait until sewer lines are installed in their neighborhood at a later time. The wastewater utility will front the cost of these sewer lines. That's why it will take us some time, and we will do this slowly. We will work with the Development and Sustainability Department to prioritize based on public health, aquifer quality, the cost of the improvements to come up with a priority list in the city for where we're going to install these lines. Once the lines are then installed, it is the responsibility of the property owner to tie in, to abandon their old septic system, and to pay their impact fees.
Even if the septic system hasn't failed yet?
Once it fails.
Okay, what I'm looking at is there's a line of houses along the street.
Right.
And let's say there's six houses. They all have septic.
Right.
We all brought them in. They were in the county. One house's septic fails. Mm-hmm. You run along a line along down that street. Will all six be required to sign in, or
no.
Do they do it as they fail? They
right.
go in.
As they
okay.
fail.
All right. That's what I want to know.
The idea here is to try to make it so the cost of connecting to the sewer system versus if your septic fails, trying to get that cost to be about the same. So, and the way we do that, instead of having them to have to run to the front of the yard and down two blocks or whatever, is they're just running to the front.
Six houses are going to fail at some point in time. We might as well put in the sewer right. line right now, and then as they come on board,
right.
then we'll get that.
And that's why we have to work with development sustainability, kind of define where those areas most likely we should go now, with the idea that those septic systems are older, and so the idea that we'd be...
I was shocked. 24,000 septic systems? Wow.
That's a lot.
Okay. You didn't have... Okay.
Okay. Quite a few improvements to pump stations. Pump stations, if you're thinking about them, are kind of the heart of the system. They're what the power horses, the heart that's moving the water around in the system. Heavy-duty machinery. Our pump stations are, for the most part, pretty old. We're going through the process of rehabbing those. I think you've got one coming. You approved one, and you've got a change order coming up on one because we do get in there, and we find a lot of problems, a lot of electrical problems, a lot of unforeseen things with such old infrastructure. We'll be spending a fair amount of money over the next couple of years to improve these pump stations. Very, very important to the functioning of the system. And we've talked a little bit at the retreat about some of the plant expansions that are coming your way. We're going to have to expand the Greenfield wastewater reclamation plant, and eventually we're going to also build the Signal Butte water treatment plant in to serve Southeast Mesa.
Which also happens to be at Signal Butte and Elliott.
Yes, it does, by the way. Yeah. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Questions? Councilman Richens.
I know in a discussion in the not-too-distant future, we're going to be talking about water rates, and there's some pretty significant needs here. Is holding line on water rates in the water division the best idea at this time?
Great segue to the next topic. Let's do the utility rates next. Yeah,
I know it was in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you. No, it's great. Let's, Candace, why don't you come forward and let's...
Wait a second.
Talk that up. Oh, I was trying to answer this question. Oh, you're done?
Candace,
I get a whole presentation.
Wait, wait. Candace, would you please come forward? There. Now I'm happy.
Thank you.
I got nothing to add to that. That was funny enough.
Yes, that is a great segue. So our next presentation is about our utility rate recommendations for the 12-13 fiscal year.
Again.
Yeah.
All because of you.
We'll come back to solid waste.
So let me formally announce that we have skipped item 2C, and we're going to item 2D. And Mr. Black, if we have time, which we may probably won't, we'll come back later.
Thursday.
To item 2C on Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay. But thanks for sitting through the meeting. Go ahead.
These do affect him, too. He is one of our utilities, so we're all together. So just as a reminder, our enterprise fund is comprised of multiple individual enterprises. They are run as separate businesses. You saw two of them right before this presentation. Debt service has a significant impact on the future rates that we need to charge within those enterprises. We do treat the entire enterprise fund, though, as a whole. So there are many different pieces, but we manage it and treat it as a whole. Our fund balance is used to smooth the rates. We try to not have any peaks within our rates in our upcoming years. Okay. And we do continue to adhere to at least a ending fund balance of at least 8 to 10% in the overall fund, enterprise fund. Okay. There are many things that we have done over the last year regarding our debt, and you've heard a lot about that when we talked about our restructuring of our current debt service payments, where we were able to achieve a significant amount of savings through a lot of time and effort on staff. And that is a direct result in the rates that we're going to recommend today, is that restructuring of that debt. The other thing that we've also done is we've right-sized our capital improvement program, our CIP. So you heard today about some of the projects that are upcoming. Some of them are in the next couple years. Some of them on the major plants and so forth are looking out at the growth. So what we've done is we've gone.
Go
ahead.
Okay. That has some kind of implication that we were wrong-sized before of our capital improvement program. What's different about what have we changed to right-size our program?
Great. What we've done is we've looked out at our growth factors to see what their trends are over the next 8 years. We actually do an 8-year capital improvement program. We were not wrong-sized before. We were right-sized with the information we had at the time on what our growth patterns were going to be. But every year we look at those and make sure that we are conforming to the growth patterns and the trends in the community and making sure that we're not building too soon, but making sure we're also in the design and so forth so that it comes online in time.
Okay, so you adjusted for growth trends.
Obviously, we adjusted for the slowing down the economy.
Got it.
And recognized that, you know, that's not going to happen as fast as we had in the original 5-year plan. It's a rolling plan, right? So we're looking 5 and 8 years out. So actually, adjustments we're making are 5, 8 years out, when we said, well, we might have needed this expansion of a plant or whatever. And we're realizing now maybe that's just getting pushed out a little bit more. Now we can focus on what we actually do is kind of rebalance it. We look for opportunities to do reinvestment and rehabs in the older parts of the community as we kind of balance it out. But what we do is we do look at some of these big projects like Signal Butte and Greenfield. Those are very expensive, large projects that are going to be driven by growth. So one, we don't want to ignore them, but we also we don't want to build them too far ahead of growth, but it's a timing issue. So we have rebalanced based on the current realities of growth in the residential area, and that's what we've done here.
So that rebalancing saves people money because
it pushes the projects further out into the future. Is typically what happens. The projects don't go away.
So that takes pressure off the need for
correct for maybe a sooner than expected. And one of the things we're going to try to do is, if we've got the time, maybe plan and we'll talk about this over the next couple of years. Is maybe recognizing inevitably those projects are going to be needed. We recognize that, you know, Southeast Mesa around the airport is going to get built out. It's just a matter of when. And so when will we need to have these projects done in time? So that's the planning we have to go through.
Okay. Thanks.
And the third item that we've worked on considerably over this last year is also estimating our future debt payments based on those future projects. So we've realigned our future projects and worked with our finance consultant to make sure that we have structured those future debt to minimize the peaks. So again, we have a smooth level of debt. So we want to continue that. That was part of our restructuring efforts. It's also our efforts as we go forward and consider issuing new debt in the future. So those three things together have really impacted our recommendations for rate increases today. So as we go forward, if we look back a year ago, we were sitting looking at some considerable rate increases for all of our enterprises with the exception of electric a year ago. This year, for going for 12-13, staff is recommending that we have a 0% or no increase to any of our utility rates for the 12-13 fiscal year. And again, this is what we're seeing as the consequence of that effort to reduce that debt, save that money for the citizens, and this is where they're receiving it. So they're receiving it and not having the increases that we had previously thought we would need to do this year.
Cumulatively, how much on an average bill is this? $10 a month, $5 a month? You know, if somebody had electric, gas, water, and solid waste for the city, what would that look like?
Why don't we bring? That's a good number. Why don't we calculate that on Thursday? Why don't we present that?
Yeah, we can bring that back. I don't have the number, the dollars for each one of
these. But we could go and say on a typical average bill, and then let's go calculate those savings. We can get that for you on Thursday.
Yeah, let's do that because I think that's a good story to tell.
Yeah, we'll bring that on Thursday.
Yep, no problem. There is one pending legislation item out there, which is Senate Bill 1288. This is calling for the repeal of the Arizona Department of Water Resources fee, basically to the cities, that they're charging the cities. If you recall, last year we passed this as a pass-through fee. So this is currently being charged out to our citizens here in Mesa. If this fee is repealed to the cities, we'd be coming back and asking you to also repeal the pass-through fee that we're currently charging the citizens.
Councilor Richens.
Sorry, I feel like I'm talking too much. That was the environmental fee on the water bill, right?
Correct.
And then
it was a fund. It was to fund.
The amount already
existed. Fund the
existed.
Department of Water Resources.
We increased it to cover this and other environmental.
No. Okay,
am I confused?
It's not the environmental fee. It's not the environmental fee. That's the separate fixed rate. That's
right.
The fixed amount. That's not what this is.
Okay.
This was a fee that the state passed along to the cities.
Right.
It wasn't a fee. It was an actual invoice.
It was an allocation.
It was a bill.
They passed this much money, and for us it was... To fund their department.
And Mr. Butler, $700,000?
Yeah.
Around that?
Ours is on the order of $650,000.
Yeah, okay.
The state just decided that, for whatever reason, cities should pay the cost of the Department of Water Resources. And obviously we had a lot of problems with that, not least of which is that meant that mining and agriculture and other major users of water in the state were not paying into. Yeah.
But the results were that we end up having a charge of how much on each bill? 47?
Somewhere on the order of 45 cents.
45 cents is on each.
And it's stated as a separate line item.
Yes. Right.
Correct.
Right.
It's a separate line item.
I was
bill.
Getting the two fees.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're going to, at budget season, we're going to review that other fee as well.
Right. And we can do that. We probably can do that on Thursday.
And the reason why we separated it out was we said that this would be a fee. This is a fee. We wanted to point out the fact that the legislature, and don't try and find a reason why they did that. They just did it, okay? That we stated as a separate fee so our citizens would understand that this was a pass-through. This was a charge on the citizens by the legislature, even though they didn't want to accept it, and with the promise that if that were ever removed by the legislature, we would remove it off the bills. And that's why we separated it out.
Correct. And Mayor, Council Members, I don't know if Scott Butler is here. We were cautiously optimistic this would get repealed this year, but I think of late we're maybe less optimistic.
Whatever happens, happens.
Right.
I mean, if it stays in, the fee stays in. If it doesn't stay in, then we can come back and staff can make the recommendation. I'd be more than happy to remove this, but only if the state doesn't bill us for what is purely simply a transfer of budget responsibility. It has nothing to do with water use. It has nothing to do with anything other than we don't have the money in our general fund, meaning the state. Cities, you're going to pay it for it.
Right, it was an assessment.
Because there's a lot of cities in this state that don't have water departments.
Right.
And they still have to pay the bill. So it was a pure assessment on the cities.
That's right. Mayor and Council, really the only other thing that I can add as it's been stated that we don't know yet. It's kind of like my answer on her from last week. We don't know what the compromise budget proposal is going to have as it relates to this fee. We're optimistic that they will retool the fee, but it's just speculation on our part. But it's probably 50-50 about whether the fee is eliminated or will continue for another year. We should know probably later this week is the rumor of when we'll probably see a budget at the legislature.
And with that, if there's any questions on our utility rate recommendations, that is the end of the formal presentation. Short and sweet.
Well, that's the time frame then.
Yes, that's the time frame. You actually come in, we'll do a notice of intention. We'll be coming in through in May. The actual introducing the ordinances will come on June 4th with adoption on June 25th, the same night that we adopt the final budget.
Just so you know.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
So let's go ahead. Do you want to go to executive session?
Yeah. Okay, I'll entertain a motion to enter an executive session. Vice Mayor, Second from Council Member Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are now moving to the executive session. Thank you.